everybody, and welcome to the EC Method. I am one of your coaches, Chloe Madeley.
And I am your other coach, Emma Story Gordon. Our goal at the EC Method is to encourage, educate, and empower you to get the results that you've always wanted.
Listen to our weekly podcasts, go to our website, theecmethod.co.uk, or simply follow us on Instagram to get more information.
Literally, that's my life. Not as bad as James, though. He's way worse. Okay. Are we live?
We are live.
So lucky.
James, though. So lucky. Why?
No, I mean, people are really lucky that we're live.
Yeah, I know. Hi, guys. What's up?
As we were just saying, we definitely know what we're doing all the time.
Okay, well, we've got questions, right?
Yes, I've got questions. We hope everybody had a lovely weekend. Emma, how was your weekend? I mean, I suppose it's like Monday through Sunday, you're just out in Mexico having FUN.
FUN. Yeah, it was a really nice weekend. We went to Tulum. It rained the whole time.
Oh my God, you went to Tulum. Like, why didn't I pick that up from the stories? I didn't realize you'd moved like.
It was mainly because it like everything kind of went a little bit wrong, but it was just the best time anyway. But yeah, we went
to
that like jungle gym and all this stuff, but we couldn't find it. And then there was like this huge storm. So we just swam in the sea and then came home and it was really nice. Yeah.
I see it. And you know, aside from just like all of the amazing photos of food and you guys running around in the rain, looking like, I mean, it's very romantic. I was very into it. I was like, this looks like such a good trip. I also noted that your lats seem to have grown, and I'm happy for you.
Oh, thanks, babe. That means a lot. That really does mean a lot. Thank you. Yes. How was your weekend? It looked very wholesome and cute.
Oh, I just love my family. You know, the older you get, this is why I realise, like, I do want kids, because I do want to get...
I was going to say, are you broody?
It's not that I'm broody, like, I want to have a baby. It doesn't feel like, it's like I want to have a family one day, like, and I want a grown-up family. Like, I want to be sitting around a table, like my mum was this weekend, sat around a table with all her children and all their partners and all her grandkids. And that, like, it's such a laugh. Like, it's so much fun. We all know, obviously, we all know each other. We're completely different. Everybody's got a completely different job. And it's very interesting. And everybody's got a real opinion. And I just was like, I don't want to be in my 60s, 70s, 80s and be sat at a table with James.
Do you know what? I feel the same. I've said this before. I'm like, I would love to be like a grandma. Like, I want to be like where your mum is. Like, when I'm that age, I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. But I don't like, I don't know if I want to actually have kids, which I realize is like part of the process to get to that stage.
But I don't think you're meant to. I think you make the decision when it's crunch time and you have to make the fucking decision. And like, I came back, James wasn't here because he's obviously mad busy with work at the moment, and I came back home and I was like, we just gotta get on with it, man. Like, we gotta come on, pedal to the metal.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's like a great reason to like, what I've decided, I really want like really nice family gatherings. So I'm going to go through like 20 years of bringing up kids in order to get. I know.
But then also I think about like Bertie. I'm such a good dog mom. I'm the best dog mom. And I'm like,
Like you weren't really that keen.
On a dog. No, absolutely not. And we still don't have time for a dog. I don't know what the hell James is thinking, convincing me and me letting him. No, I do, because when he gets angry and he like doesn't shut up, it's like just anything to shut you up. So I do know why I conceded. I don't know what he was thinking. We don't have time for a dog, but you make it work. I feel like it's that with kids. Why are we talking about this on a live? We have to get to the questions. This is so inappropriate. Sorry, guys, for having like a friendship. Wait,
there's a couple of points here. So Liz is saying, babies are so hard. I had three. I wanted four. Just have that grown-up family one day. Oh, just to have that grown-up family one day. Yeah.
Reason. I think it's a really good reason. It's basically looking forward to your quality of life when you're older and realizing you have to make a decision now. I think it's a good fucking reason. I'm here for it.
Or could you adopt like 16-year-olds.
Could I adopt a really hot 18-year-old?
Get them to, you know, and then you kind of miss a lot of that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But if you have quite the same bond.
I'm not going to find it easy to get pregnant anyway, so it's not as if this is going to happen overnight. It's going to be a fucking slog, I know that much.
Well, you think that, but then it might not, might just be like, bam.
I haven't been on contraception for a minute. It's not going to be easy. I know it's not.
Yeah, this is getting into quite a personal shit.
I told you, we should probably move on. Not that I don't care sharing, but everyone else is like, I don't care. Answer my question.
Answer our fat loss questions. Jeez.
I quite like that our podcast is a little bit, you know.
Do you know what? I think most people do. I think most of the like feedback we get is like, oh, I loved when you spoke about that. It was so real, rather than, oh, see that time you explained energy balance for the 100th time? Oh, that was gold for me. I've listened to it 3 times.
At least we're spicing it up a bit.
Laura's saying, we do care. That's nice, Laura. Kanchan's also saying, I didn't mind offering Bella up for the weekends. Hard work. Babe, that's not what we want. We want the family. The family that comes. We want to be grandmas, okay? I don't want to look after someone's child for the weekend. Also, the immense amount of pressure, like a lot of my mates have kids and like they all look after each other's kids and like, oh, so nice, looks really nice. I'm like, no. I think I'd just be like, but imagine if they scraped their knee while they were like under my care. No.
I make my nieces and nephews cry like pretty much on the hour, every hour. And I look at my brothers and I'm like, sorry. And they're like, that's fine, I don't care. Like they literally don't care.
Oh God.
Yeah, my nieces and nephews cry. Edith this weekend, I was like, you have to share. And she just lost it. Like she lost her shit and she didn't pull it together for like an hour. And I was like looking at my brother Tom, I was like, I'm really sorry. He was like, it's fine, let her cry.
Fair, they have to learn. Polly's saying kids are magic in their 20s. They go to gigs and drink with you.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, my parents stopped drinking, but I mean, they let me get drunk. They facilitate it.
I have 4 kids, terrified of how many grandkids I could potentially have. Yeah, see, that's the other thing. Like, you don't want too many because it's gonna cost you a lot.
Yeah,
the kind of grandma I want to be, which is like, oh yeah, grandma will treat you to this. Grandma will pay for your wedding. Grandma will pay.
Grandma's not paying for anyone's fucking wedding, okay? Grandma, that is not grandma's jurisdiction. My grandparents are really competitive though, so my brother, and like so do like the kids of their parents. So like Jack said to my mom this weekend when his wife was out of earshot, he was like, mom, last year Claire got Kit one of those fake little cars.
Yeah.
And he was like, this year you have to get him a bike, okay? Like, you have to compete here. Like, come on. I was like, why the fuck do you care? He was like, I care. I was like, whoa. Okay.
That is weird. I don't think, like, as a child, like, you do compare only because, like, naturally you do. And I remember one year, my dad's mum got me a hairbrush for Christmas, and my mum's mum got me like this full like kit of nice stuff and like nice moisturizer and all this kind of stuff, and then gave me 50 quid, and I was like,
oh, I know where I'm finding this. Brilliant.
Interesting. Carrie's just saying granny story Gordon, which I think sounds pretty sweet, to be honest.
It would be GSG. GSG.
Oh, I can't wait.
I get very excited about that.
I think I'm going to have to adopt someone else's children.
You can just share mine. I mean, if James and I have kids, they're going to be, I do say if, because it isn't if, they'll be in.
Amelia's going to have kids and I'm going to be grandma, right?
You're going to be Anne.
No, I want to be GSG.
No, Chloe said GSG. I want that.
Right, okay. Should we answer some questions?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, I mean, by this point I feel like everyone's getting involved and I'm into it, so
yeah, we're quite involved now.
Before we get into the questions, I just wanted to say, because I've been thinking this every time we've done a live, every time you drink from a Christmassy cup out in Mexico, it's very jarring.
I know, we felt like that as well. We've managed to get over it. It's been quite traumatic for us, but at the moment, like, I'm feeling okay about it.
Okay, good. Okay, right, let's move. So, Samantha Bolton, can... Siri? Siri loves to get in.
Siri, please.
Please. Okay. Samantha Bolton, hi, can leg raises be done with bent knees? Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. They're slightly easier because your center of mass or your knees are closer to your center of mass than if you have your legs out. We do have one on the live, actually. Sam, hi, ladies. Can't stay and watch. She's probably gone now because then we spoke for 20 minutes about babies. But really wanted to ask some guidance on a deload week, please. When is it needed, if ever, and how to go about it? Thank you.
Yeah, I think if you really take your training seriously and you're really getting in the gym 3, 4, 5 days a week and you're lifting heavy and you're lifting to failure, for newbies, really, I wouldn't say that they would need one before that kind of 12-week mark. For kind of more old hat lifters, every 4 to 8 weeks, probably a really nice way to do it. Research just shows, I've done so many posts on this before, so I'll just reel it off now. It's a reduction in overall volume that is going to help you re your recovery. It's not about the weight lifted, it's about the volume. So typically it's anywhere from, you know, a 30 to 70% deduction. So for example, if you normally do 3 sets, you'd bring it down to 1 or 2. I would err on the side of caution, do it properly and just do 1. But the intensity can stay the same, or you can deduct the volume via your training frequency. So instead of doing, say, 3 sessions that week, you would do 1. It doesn't matter how you do it. But I also like to say to clients, if you really are feeling run down, tired, like your strength is flagging in the gym, you're not enjoying it, I really like telling clients just to take a week away from the gym and just hit steps. I think it's a really nice way to kind of get that drive back that you have when you first start training. So yeah, those are my thoughts on it. Emma?
Yeah, I agree. And I think actually the psychological break of forcing yourself to get away from the gym, because what you'll find is after 3 or 4 days, you're probably like, yeah, I kind of want to get back. You're like, no, I'm taking a whole week off. And then by the Monday, you're like raring to get back to the gym. And I think this psychological break is as important as the physiological break, especially if you're recovering well from exercise. Like, the main benefits you see with the deload week is when you're like quite an elite level athlete and you're pushing into what we term like overreaching, which is the stage before overtraining, where you aren't quite adapting or you aren't quite recovering to the amount of training that you're doing. And then you take a week off to, well, a deload week, so reduce your volume to allow you to recover and adapt, and then you push on again. Most people on the EC method, and myself included, don't need to do deload weeks, and I train pretty hard. The time when I will implement a deload week is when I feel like I need it. Like, it's more of a intuitive training approach. Do you like that, Amelia?
I
want
to say hairs on my neck.
Yeah, we have unconditional permission to train and not train whenever we want. But I think with most of our clients who aren't bodybuilders or who aren't elite level athletes, you can kind of do it when, A, when you feel like you need it, or B, when you're like, right, well, do you know what? At the end of this month, I'm going away for a work conference and it's going to be almost impossible to train as much as I do. So what I'm going to do is train on the Monday before I go, have that week as deload week, and then come back and hit it hard. And up until that point, I'm going to train as hard as I can. Mm. Like, fitting it into your life is probably a little bit more important in most people's circumstances than, oh, this is my training cycle, unless you have like really serious strength goals.
I completely agree. I think it should be intuitive, and intuitively, like, for clients, just to protect them, if I know that they're training hard and I know that they know what they're doing, you know, like Kerry, for example, Kerry doesn't fuck around in the gym, then yeah, there probably would come a point where she's like, I'm having a bit of a shit week. I'd be like, okay, let's pull back a bit. But even that as a coach is intuitive. I agree with Emma. Same for me. I do tend to take them really like an 8 week kind of range. But again, not only is it intuitive, it's also if I kind of need to in terms of my life that week, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, I think, oh God, Emma, do you remember? I think we've talked about this before, like the fear that when we first started training, like, oh my God, I'm going to take a week. My God, like if I did less than 4 sessions in a week, I was just like, oh my God, shit, so weird. Because yeah, I do think psychologically it is a good thing to implement.
Yeah, and then you're not like controlled by that as well. Like, you can take a break and you are fine. I think what a lot of people find is that their training is very related to their nutrition, it's very related to their steps, it's very related to the whole picture of it. So if they're not training, then they tend not to eat as well, and they tend not to go and get their steps because they think, well, if I'm not doing that and that, what's the point doing that? I won't bother sleeping well. And then it all kind of collapses in, which I think is where calling it like a deload week as opposed to just I'm having a week off is really useful, because you're like, no, this is useful to my overall progression. And same as when we say like, oh, we're having a diet break week, as opposed to I'm having a week off my diet. It might like on paper look like it should mean the same thing, but the way that you like think about it depends, will depend on the actions that you take. And then if that kind of okay, two questions here. Hi ladies, hi Laura. She says she's finally made alive. Two questions, please. One, could you explain minimum effective dose Chloe mentioned on her stories?
Minimum effective dose. We do talk about this all the time as well. It's basically our way of saying to you guys, you don't have to do absolutely everything balls to the wall with a perfectionist mindset to get great results. You can do the minimum effective dose, which we've already laid out for all of you in terms of your steps, in terms of step minimums, I should say, weekly workout minimums, kind of calorie caps, you know, top of the brackets. These are your minimum effective dosages. And it's just basically Emma and I trying to coach everybody away from exactly what Emma was just talking about. Well, if I can't do X, then there's no point in doing anything because everything's ruined. No, you can still do Y and get great results off the back of it. And really, again, just to kind of, I suppose, develop on that idea, it's what Emma as well would call imperfect action. And me, much less succinctly, would say kind of like a bird's eye view, big picture approach to consistency as opposed to acute day-to-day perfection. And if you can nail the minimum effective dose, you know, the imperfect action, the big picture consistency, you're going to find that you have a lot easier, more enjoyable time of it, because it allows you to continue to live your life while then getting the results you want. And it is, without a fucking shadow of a doubt, the hardest thing that Emma and I coach and the hardest things that our clients have to crack.
Yeah. It's such, like, we can talk for hours on this, but it's such an important topic. I think if you're looking at it just in terms of training to give you like the physiological responses here, like what people talk about when they say this is the minimum effective dose, like this is the least you can do to get like an improvement that you're looking for. So like, this is the least you can do to get an improvement in your health, or this is the least you can do to get an improvement in your strength. So you're looking at like the bare minimum that's going to get you some kind of result. Versus the opposite end of the spectrum, there would be maximal recoverable volume. So that's the absolute maximum training you can do that you can also recover from. So you've got like two ends of the spectrum there. And between those two ends, what happens is like a law of diminishing returns. So like before, when you got like a huge benefit from the first session you did that week, when you get to like the sixth session, I'm not saying there's no benefit from doing your sixth workout, but the benefit you're getting in comparison to the first workout is like tiny, minuscule. And this is why it's so, so important to get your head around the point of there is always point doing something. And we are all stuck in the mindset, or like gravitate towards the mindset of, if I don't do it perfectly, or if I don't do at least five sessions a week, there's no point doing any. Even if I don't do at least three sessions a week, like there's always a point doing one. And in fact, you get the vast majority of your benefit from the first 1 hour of exercise you do a week in terms of your health benefits. Like the graph is insane, like the benefits you're getting from that. Then after that, yeah, you keep getting benefits, but the returns you're getting on each additional amount of exercise you're doing are smaller and smaller and smaller. So I always use that graph to try and get people in the headspace of like, there is always a point doing something. And that would be like minimum effective dose. And this is like Chloe's saying, like, this is why we set you minimum. So you're like, okay, even if I tick these off, I know I'm still making progress. And on the tough weeks, like that might be all you do. And on the really good weeks for you, that might be that you push closer to maximal recoverable volume.
What a brilliant elaboration. Fantastic, Emma.
Okay, question two. What does puck yeah mean?
Emma?
So I stole this from a Mark Manson.
Can we stop? Just stop right there. Emma just literally said, so I stole this from Mark Manson, and I say X, and this is what it means, and this is why I implement it into my coaching.
Yeah.
People need to do this more, because there's a lot of plagiarism happening, and it's really annoying to people like me, who are like, credit the person who came up with it. Anyway, Emma, please do continue.
I actually think the best ideas come from like someone else's idea in a different context, taken into another context where it is still applicable. So Mark Manson talks about this in the context of dating. He's like, if someone's not a fuck yeah, they're a no, basically. If you want to read that, it's actually quite a good little essay. Then I would just put fuck yes or no into Google and it'll come up. But I like to put it in like a dieting context, and obviously I don't like swearing, so I just call it fuck yes or no. And if you've not watched Summer Heights High, then you won't understand what the context of that is. But essentially,
that fuck with piss, with a pee, miss, with a piss.
So yeah, that basically the idea is, when you're choosing your indulgences, like let's say the dessert menu comes and you're like, oh, I don't really know which one I want. None of them are like jumping out at me. That's because it's not a puck yes, so it should be a no. Yeah. That's like an easy way. So if you really want something, if you're like, yes, do you know what? The apple crumble, oh, it's a puck yes for me. Like, I'm going to choose that. Then yes, absolutely have it. But if you're like, meh, I don't really know which one I want, I'll just pick something anyway. That's a no. So just say no.
Yep, I agree. I feel like you said something and I really want to. Oh, I know what it is. Mark Manson is also the person that says that he doesn't like the phrase, it is what it is, right? Am I right in saying that?
I don't know if he said that, but I hate that phrase as well.
I love that phrase. And I think it's in that book, The Art of Not, Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Uh-huh.
I actually think that phrase is fucking genius. Sometimes, like, there's nothing you can do. It is what it is. Put it in a box and move the fuck on. And that everyone now is like, obviously, it's really out of fashion to like that phrase. And I'm like, that phrase is brilliant and very succinct and actually sums up a lot. Why do we not like it?
Unless it's used in the wrong context. Like, if there's genuinely nothing you can do about it, sure, it is what it is. You need to leave it alone. But I think so many people are like, I hate my job, but it is what it is. No, it's fucking not. Like, it is what it is if you leave it as what it is. It's like, what's for you will go past you if you don't get off your ass and go and like, action it. So I think the reason I don't like it is because I see a lot of people do things like that. Like, oh, I overate again, but it is what it is. Like, well, no, you learn from it. So the next time that doesn't happen, or you're just essentially letting life happen to you as opposed to taking any action.
I choose my choice. I choose my choice. Where's that from?
Okay.
Ask Amelia where that's from.
What?
I choose my choice. I choose. So it's a girl shouting it. I choose my choice. Where's it from?
She's got AirPods in.
Oh, fucking Amelia. Where is she when you need her, eh? Eh?
Never here when you need her. Yes, we spent like an hour apart and I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, my God, you guys are gonna have serious separation anxiety when you know I can't come in November. You know I can't come the last 10 days of November. I'm going back to Dubai Sevens. Oh. They're actually paying me.
I'm gonna come down and annoy you in London when I get back. So
babe, anytime, any fucking time. You are gonna get really bad separation anxiety when you
come. I know, back. I'm gonna need to be around people. That's why I'm gonna come and annoy you.
Yeah, fine. Totally fine. Andy got married on Saturday.
Yay!
I just thought of that because I'm gonna go to Glasgow and James does good bad rugby tour and hang out with him. So you should come if you want.
As if you've arranged that with Andy and you've not.
I haven't arranged it. I don't even know what month they're going in. I think it's January, but I might be wrong.
Of course I'm coming. Also, I want to come to the thing.
What thing?
James's thing. Like his tour. Can I come?
He's got like two happening at the same time. It's really weird. Yes, come.
Okay. Yeah.
Be mortally offended. I hate his like I cringe inside. I'm like, oh God, please stop. But people love it. It's very weird to me.
I'm excited for that now. Okay. Had a massive day of drinking yesterday. Mamma Mia at the O2. So lots of wine, ouzo, and dancing. Have no regrets as it was brill, but need a bit of a talking to, please, to stop me eating everything in sight today.
You know what I find really helpful, if I'm trying to stay on my diet and I'm actively choosing and I'm actively saying to myself, I don't want to, because I'm hungover, fall in the fuck it bucket, order pizza, eat a tub of ice cream, everything in sight. I find that honestly, just making your normal meals, but potentially like increasing their size, their volume, A, for all the same reasons that we would say anyway, it's going to leave you feeling really full and satiated. And that is really going to mitigate, because I think the thing is with hangovers, I actually don't think the driving force is a craving. I think the driving force is wanting to feel full and satiated, because you feel like shit, right? After you've had a big night out on the piss or a big day out on the piss. And as soon as you get that feeling, you just slip right back into your diet. It's very, very easy. But I think the second that you're like, oh, I'm hungover, I don't want to feel like this, so I'll order a pizza, then it can spiral. And this is just anecdotal. This is just my experience. But honestly, do a big, big volume, massive bowl of food that you really like and really enjoy. And I guarantee you, as soon as it's gone down, you'll be done.
Good tip.
Oh, thanks. I never know when it's like anecdotal, but.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it works for different people, doesn't it? I think you're right. Like, people are craving comfort. I think sometimes you want something which isn't to say it would be quote unquote off your diet or over your calories or anything, that's a little bit more like carby or stodgy than, I don't know, chicken and veg. So just make that, but make it higher volume.
I feel like the number one thing people want to get, McDonald's on a hangover will fit in your calories and make you happy. But I feel like the number one thing people want is pizza. And I'm sorry, as a female, if you are quote unquote dieting, it ain't going to happen. You're not fitting it in. It's not happening. Which means either you go, okay, caution to the wind, I'm going to order the pizza, I don't care, I'm choosing to do that. Or you go, no, I want to stick to my diet. That's a no-go. I'll go for McDonald's instead. A McDonald's cheeseburger is 300 calories, guys. Very good.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, Sarah, hey, following a herniated disc in my neck 2 years ago, I find following upper body, my shoulders and upper back muscles become very tight and it feels like it's pulling on my neck. Do you have any good upper body shoulder stretches to help the following, or to help following my workout?
Yeah, I, before you do your workout, and also just, I would say every, it's an everyday thing. I'm like this, I hold my tension in my upper body a lot and my traps get really tight and like kind of like the top of my like erector spinae. And it's a really good tip, just, and Emma talks about this, he's talked about this before, I've talked about it before, PTs everywhere, well, not everywhere, a lot of PTs will do this with their clients that have this issue. You need to decompress your shoulders and actively breathe out and drop your shoulders down. And then you can follow it down all the way to your feet and stand back up again. But the whole time, consciously make sure that your shoulders, your trap, your upper back is very relaxed. And it's a movement pattern that's A, going to help ease that tension. And B, it's just a nice conscious trigger of how to drop that tension out of your upper body and do like a little movement pattern. So that would be my tip.
Agreed. I also think as you're lifting, it's very easy, especially if your body is like protecting that area of your neck, to tense up your traps, which I think we all do a little bit. And you'll notice, especially with things like lateral raises, like as you get more fatigued, your shoulders start coming higher and you're getting more and more tense. So it could just be that you really make sure your form is good. If that means that you get two less reps or something, don't worry about that. Just try not to over tense your neck, because you're probably more predisposed than most people to doing that as like a bit of a protective mechanism, understandably. But just watch for that as well. And also just general posture, like shoulders come up quite a lot when you're tense about anything or when you're typing. So just have like a bit of a check every now and again.
Yeah.
Okay. Last live, I asked about how we knew we were lifting heavy enough, as I suspected I wasn't. And I was worried about not finishing sets or it feeling hard. You said to change my mindset and that you can normally lift heavier than you think. Just to say, I pushed it this week, increased weights in all my sessions, only had one fail to move it and had to reduce the weight. Had a 4-day weekend here with lots on, so knew nutrition wasn't going to be perfect, so felt like I'd smashed the gym workouts to balance it out. Thanks for pushing us. Awesome. Yeah. And Claire's also telling you that the quote is from Sex and the City and Charlotte says it.
Yes, I choose my choice. Yes, because Carrie's What is it? It's Carrie who says something to her and annoys her. I love you. Thank you for that. Can you see my thigh? Can you see it?
A little bit.
I have, without a doubt, the biggest, most fuck-off thigh in the whole world. And I just thought I'd tell everybody in case they're looking at me like, Chloe looks a bit odd to me.
You literally can't see it from where you're sitting.
Good. Just had to flag that.
Pan Chan saying, how badass would it be if James and Andy do a podcast appearance? We'll get them.
Emma and I just need to action all of our ideas.
We have so many ideas, like, oh, we'll do this. And then, yeah.
Because then we've got so much going on that we come up with these really fun ideas and then they just kind of fall by the wayside. But we do need to action it. I agree.
Okay. Thanks for those explanations, ladies. Love it. You're very welcome. Okay, Sarah's saying, I do the decompress every day and get regular deep tissue massages. Gunner adds some yoga in my week to keep mind flexible and just some extra stretching. Yeah, that sounds perfect. And it's great that you're getting massages as well, because I think that really, really helps. I just didn't want to suggest it because they're expensive. But if you're already doing that, fantastic.
Yeah, agree. Good for you as well to keep on top of that. That's what we like to see. Is that it?
A massage gun.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think they're quite good. And they only cost as much as like one massage.
Good point, Emma. Good point. Okay, is that it for the live?
Yeah, we're up to date.
My dad was texting me while you were talking. He was like, send Emma my love.
Aw, thanks, Richard. The national treasure.
I know, but then I read the article and it wasn't very nice. I was like, oh, I was like, I promoted you on my Instagram page. Horrible man. I think it was just a lot of like backhanded compliments. Anyway, moving on. Standard press. Polly Fishwick Ward. Hi, Clemma. I'm in my first round of the EC method and I'm learning so much. It's taken a few weeks for the penny to fully drop, but it feels liberating to finally start to break some of my idiotic notions about how to lose weight effectively. I've gained a fair bit of fat. I have fat. I'm not fat. Very good. With my own attempts over the couple of years looking back, it really was a feast and famine approach, attempting to stick to 1200 calories, go figure. Anyway, my question is, I am listening to all of the back catalogue of the EC podcast and I find them very motivational. Being hungry and fat loss is a topic covered, but that's my problem. I sound like a dick saying this. I love you, Polly. I sound like a dick saying this, but I'm simply not hungry. I've switched to eating more satiating foods and ensuring that I'm hitting my protein and veg, which has obviously massively helped. I eat around 1600 to 1800 calories daily. Does this mean that I'm not losing fat, as hunger is a byproduct of fat loss? Excuse me, I burped. The scales are going down slowly, but there is so much that can affect the number, water, etc. I just want to check. Thank you. And I apologize for this war and peace question. Great question. So if you've changed your diet and you're eating more satiating foods and you're in a deficit, which in a 1600 to 1800 calorie bracket with all of the minimum expenditures that we've set you, and you have body fat to lose and the scales are trending down, you are losing body fat. It is a very simple equation. 1 + 1 = 2, and you are getting that result that we want. But it is fair to say that at certain points on a fat loss journey, clients can sometimes struggle with hunger. And that typically is a result of fat loss, increased expenditure via steps, via training, decreased calorie intake, losing fat, which is losing energy. It can happen. That doesn't mean that it's guaranteed to happen for everyone. It just can happen. So I would say, keep going. You're doing fucking fantastically. I love everything about this post, and it's working. So don't overthink it. Emma?
Yeah, I agree. You can't be consistently losing weight and not losing body fat. Well, I mean, you could technically in very strange situations, or if you were losing a lot of muscle mass or something, but in this situation, you are losing body fat. I know that we say, and I think people still get a bit confused about this, like, I know that we say the scales fluctuate, and they do acutely, but if you're seeing consistent trends in either direction, it's a pretty good sign that you're either putting on body fat or losing body fat. Or if you want to be really sure, it's a good sign that you're either putting on mass or losing mass, whether that's body fat or muscle mass. But if you're also resistance training, you're not going to be losing muscle mass. So you are losing fat, which is perfect. It's funny that it's just like a great example, and I'm not picking on you at all, of people just overthinking everything. Because it's like, if you were really hungry, you'd be annoyed. If you're not hungry, you're like, oh, is this even working? So it's like, you can't win. I actually think you're in an amazing position. It sounds like you've increased your protein, increased your food volume, which means that you stay pretty satiated. It's actually a dream situation to be losing body fat and not hungry. Like, that means that you're really freaking nailing it. Now, when I say that, if anyone's listening and is like, oh, I feel hungry, should I not feel hungry? Hunger is so different for everyone. It's not a good representation of whether you're in a deficit or not. You can absolutely, I don't know, eat 2000 calories of peanut butter, still be hungry at the end of the day because it's such low food volume, but you're still in a surplus. Or vice versa, you can eat really satiating food and be in a deficit, but actually be very satiated at the end of the day. So food choice comes into it massively. This is why Chloe and I are always pushing back, and people like, it's just a calorie deficit. It's like, yeah, it is just a calorie deficit, but if it's easy to stick to or not depends on the food choices you're making. Like, food choices matter hugely, and relying on your hunger either way or even at maintenance, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, unfortunately. Like, that would be great if at maintenance you just had the exact right satiety levels all the time because you were eating the amount of calories that you expended. That would just be fantastic, and it would be so easy to maintain your weight. But unfortunately, that just isn't how things work. So yeah, your hunger isn't directly related to your energy needs, especially given the food choices that we have at the moment and the highly palatable foods and the very calorie dense foods.
Yeah, amazing, amazing points. And like, to give you like a barometer and a spectrum in terms of like judging whether or not you're in an effective fat loss phase solely due to your hunger, you talk about that, you look at very, very lean individuals, and you know they are going to be really struggling with hunger. You go on the other side of the spectrum and you look at obesity, they're going to be really struggling with hunger. And then you look at your normal, like, kind of like acute perception of hunger on a day-to-day basis, and anything from, you know, your menstrual cycle to your sleep cycle to any kind of expenditure fluctuations, which you may or may not be aware of, all of these can result in increased hunger or decreased hunger, I should say, depending on how you look at it. So yeah, amazing points, well raised by Emma. And I also just want to say that I think hunger is something that like humans in the Western world wrongly fear, and it's become this kind of weird, it's one of the beating drums of the self-love movement is that you should not be hungry. Yes, you should. It's a very normal biological and hormonal process that happens to humans on a day-to-day basis for various reasons. And just because you feel hungry, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, okay, even if you had a meal an hour ago, it's time for another one. You know, we've got to learn to sit with basic science and with basic fluctuations in every context. There's nothing to fear if, you know, like I say, as long as you're not starving yourself, and I would hope that none of you on the EC method are, there's nothing to fear if you feel hungry from time to time. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's mental, isn't it, that you almost can't say that now? And it's like, oh, you're promoting eating disorders. No, you're not. Like, yeah. We could go all in on the anti-diet stuff, but it is quite ridiculous. And what is interesting as well is that, like, I like being hungry before a meal. You genuinely get more from eating that meal, like even in terms of your dopamine response, when you're a little bit hungry before you eat your meal. Like, never being hungry isn't the aim, like, isn't the goal. And again, like, there are so many caveats to this. If you're someone struggling with binge eating disorder, these things won't be applicable to you. But if you're generally someone who wants to maintain their weight or wants to lose some weight, then actually, yeah, like, being hungry from time to time is a totally normal human experience. And I think there is this fear around being hungry, And I think part of that is probably like an evolutionary response, because usually, like thousands of years ago, but really realistically, genetically, we haven't changed very much since then. Actually being hungry was like a negative thing, because you don't know when you're going to get more food. So there was that like scarcity of like, if there's food there, I should eat it. Mm. Now, obviously that's completely different. I actually did a post about this morning, because I think we put so much like guilt and shame around overeating, and it's a completely normal human physiological response. Like we're driven to want to overeat. Like I want to overeat a lot of the time. I'm sure that you do as well. Like when you're eating something that's really tasty, you're like, I could eat double this, but I know I don't need that much energy. Like I know I don't need that many calories, so I'm
you're talking about your plantain sandwich, aren't you? You're like, I can have another one, but I won't.
Could literally have 5 or 6 of those, and I'm driven to want that, but I also know the consequences of that. But I think like the fact that either you want to or that you do on occasion overeat is completely normal, and there's no point shaming yourself around that, because it is a normal thing. That's not to say it's normal, it is what it is, I'll just let it happen. It's normal. It's not serving me. It's not helpful towards my goals. So I'm going to have to change my behaviors. That doesn't mean it's easy. And it doesn't mean that you're not sort of like fighting against like your normal, your human drive, but that is still what you need to do. But to put like the guilt and shame around the fact that you want to eat a little bit more, to call yourself like greedy, you're not. Like that's a normal human drive and a normal human feeling.
Very, very, very good point, Emma. And I think comforting to hear someone like you, who is in fantastic shape and also enjoys their food, talk about it so pragmatically. And I think that's true. Like we are, the more emotion that you and shame that you wrap up in your body and food, the worse the problem's going to get. The more pragmatic you can become about it, the more you're going to start to heal these issues. It's definitely something for people to start thinking about.
Agreed. Kerry's saying, I've been revisiting the back catalogue of EC podcasts while going out on dog walks. It's so good for consolidating knowledge and helping yourself get back into the groove if you've been needing it.
I love that. And it's so alien to me, because I cannot think of anything worse than going back into the back catalogue of EC Method podcasts and being like, I think I would just be sick with like fatigue.
Yeah. And also, where do you start? Right from the start again? No.
No.
Don't know. Anyway, Kanchan saying, I was listening to the EC Method back catalogue. I think a lot of people are doing this from December last year, and it's amazing what you pick up now as an EC Method client. Reminded me why I joined, and I hope we don't get a lot of Xmas mind wobble this year.
Won't, guys. I'm already in the middle of writing all the files for you guys that are staying on in December to have to hand, to clutch.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is like, everyone has little wobbles, but then you've got the reassurance, you've got the support, you've got the knowledge this time, so it won't be half as bad. But I think to expect like nothing at all, but we're here for you, so you'll be fine.
And I've literally listed like every option and every approach in terms of psychologically and physiologically. So there's no stone that's left unturned. And, you know, feel free to just read it. Like, have it be, I'm so fantastic, have it be your Bible. No, just like, read, like, feel free to just read it. And so many tips and tricks in there. So I promise you, like, we don't just want to leave you for the lot. How many weeks is it that we're leaving for? 3 weeks of December, like, I don't know, lost in space. It's like, we are leaving you with stuff to read, to consider, to action. So you're going to be fine.
Agreed. Joe Bishop. Hello, Emma and Chloe. Does the group stay open over Christmas? Okay, so guys, what's going to happen over Christmas is if you sign up at the end of this round for the January intake, we're going to have a special group for grads who signed up, which will be open over Christmas. You'll have the files in there, you'll have workouts, you'll have access to the app, and you'll be supported. But we won't be active in that group because we're having our 3-week break. So yeah, if you sign up, then yes, the group will stay open, but it won't be this group, it will be the new grads group for the Christmas break.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Clemma. You have expressed your thoughts on many occasions referring the keto diet. I've been eating this way since 2017 and personally love the restrictions and the results I have achieved since eating this way. I initially changed to running on ketones literally in prep for my first marathon in 2018. I cannot eat anything before I run, so I completed the whole 26.2 miles on bulletproof coffee and electrolytes. I have definitely started introducing much more protein since listening to your podcast and loosening the restrictions a bit, especially when eating out, even allowing for the odd gin or two. I do have to avoid gluten and dairy, but I can't really imagine physically being able to eat carbs, i.e. potatoes and grains. Do you think this is a problem? Hold on. I have been at maintenance, 50 kilograms, and I'm 5'3" for over 3 years now, and really, really don't want to increase weight. Okay, a couple of things pop up to me here. And I think, like, you're going to need to be really honest with yourself here. In do you have like a fear of carbs? I mean, even the fact that you say, I really, really don't want to increase weight. Why? Like, what? Why are you so scared of increasing your weight? Like, I understand if you want to maintain your physique, fine. But why is there that like huge kind of fear around that? Because realistically, if you've not been eating carbs for a prolonged period of time and then you reintroduce carbs, you will put on weight, not fat, but you will put on weight because carbohydrates are stored in your muscle as glycogen, and glycogen requires water to be stored. So you will put on weight. This is again why we see a big drop in weight when you go low carb. It's not fat, it's water weight. So bear that in mind and maybe think about your relationship with the scales. I know that you say that you like the restriction of it. Again, I would question like whether what how that's serving you and whether it's impacting the rest of your life, and imagine how your life might look if you were able to eat carbs and enjoy carbs with family and maybe have like more variation around your diet and include more and not be as restricted in potentially where you're eating out or what your choices are when you eat out, etc., etc. This doesn't have to be like you go from ketogenic diet to eating pasta for every meal. It can just be like slowly introducing these things. Maybe you have one meal out that includes carbs every week and then you realize nothing bad happened when you did that, so you start introducing a little bit more. The other thing I will say is that I know that you have probably read that you like running a marathon on ketones is a good thing. It's actually normally you would still benefit a lot from carbohydrates at a distance of a marathon. It'd be a much longer distance for you to benefit from running just on ketones or at a much lower intensity. There's a reason that marathon runners carb load.
Yeah.
Because you will still be using those energy systems and that would still benefit performance. So that might be another reason that might sway you towards introducing carbs a little bit more. I think honestly, a lot of this is psychological. So it's just something to work through. And what I would do as a practice is kind of write down all of this and then question each thing numerous times, like question it 3 times. Okay, why don't I want to put on weight? Oh, because I don't want to, I don't know, put on body fat. Why don't you want to put on body fat? Like, what's the fear behind that? What is the underlying reason that you don't want to do that and that you're so worried about that? Work through these things and you'll probably come to some kind of realization that maybe it isn't best serving you. For numerous reasons, like including marathon performance, but also just quality of life. Also your health. Like, I know that there will be some people who claim that keto is better for your health, but eating that much fat and that low carb and avoiding things like grains, which we know have a direct link to increased heart health, and the variety that you get in your diet is really important to gut microbiome as well. Like, it isn't the healthiest diet. Anything at really, if you think about like anything at the end of like extremes isn't going to be healthy for diet. So just consider those things as well. Anything to add?
Yeah, amazing points raised. I don't really think that I have anything to add. I mean, you know, can you have a healthy diet that's void of whole grains and, you know, starches like potatoes, whatever? Yes, you can. You know, are whole grains a source of fantastic nutritional benefit? Yes, they are. Exactly what Emma said, especially as an endurance athlete, carbohydrates are going to be your best friend. I mean, they really, really are. Listen to my podcast episode with Paul Huff on this. And I agree with Emma. If you're talking about it from like, if you cannot, you know, your body really has a problem digesting and metabolizing carbohydrates, then it's absolutely fine for you to go lower carb. But, you know, you talk about introducing more protein, which is definitely something that again, all of you should be doing, unless you really are. Real keto diet is like 85% fat, calories from fat. It's about 10% calories from protein. It's about 5% calories from carbohydrates. That's real keto. And that is not healthy. It is just for your normal general person. It's not the optimally healthy diet. Like I say, if you have issues with carbohydrates specifically, then yes, of course you can go lower carb, but we need to then pull your protein up. And the reason why you don't do that in keto is because through a very complicated process in the body, protein can be converted to carbohydrate, well, to glycogen storage, right? Via gluconeogenesis. And that's something that you want to avoid if you are really in a very specific, typically disease state where you need to do that. If you're not in a disease state, yes, again, you can go lower carb, but getting your protein in is really important, and that's not keto. Agree with Emma, taking performance into account, carbohydrates are incredibly important. And again, I agree with Emma, there seems to be a lot of fear here around food. And typically what we'll say is, like, it's one thing having an optimally nutritional approach or something that's very subjective to the client. But if we start to sense that there's a fear around food, or there's a fear around their body changing, or that this is absolutely going to be having an impact on your day-to-day life and your day-to-day mental health, and this is something we need to work on, and we need to work on it now. So I just love everything Emma said. I think she absolutely knocked it out of the park, and I love that she wants you to write these things down and think on them. Very good, Emma. I love that response.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, it's very unlikely, especially as a very lean marathon runner, that you're struggling to metabolize carbs.
Yes, like, I agree.
It's just, there's some very niche situations where we might suggest that a low carb diet is best. Sometimes that is preference, but you certainly don't need to be going keto, and it certainly will impact your performance. So,
oh god, yeah,
definitely something to reconsider, and we're here to help that as well. And I think the first step is potentially like admitting to yourself, like, okay, a lot of this is psychological, and these are the thoughts I have around increasing carbs, and these are the fears that I have. And we don't have to do that, like I said, at a really fast pace. We can just be like, let's introduce this and make sure that you're confident that nothing bad is going to happen. Then let's introduce this, and then let's just slowly move you, like, push you out of your comfort zone a little bit at a time, and reassure you that nothing bad happens when you do that. That's the best way to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Two more quick questions, because I know that you've got.
It's fine. I'll just say that my work will run over. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I started the podcast from the beginning when I started in June. I'm on 120. It's amazing. I didn't know that people were starting from the start. It kind of freaks me out, but sure.
Me too. I'm like, what, have we changed any of our methods since the beginning?
It wasn't that long ago.
I know. But I still in this job, every month I feel like I come to a new realization, or I change my thinking on something. Some people are like, oh, I listened to something you recorded 5 years ago. I'm like, shit.
Like, I didn't know that girl.
I'm not her anymore.
That wasn't me. Okay, Laura Penny. Have managed to get my hunger much more under control since my plea for help around life after marathon training. Oh, yes. Okay. Remember, right. Knowing that there are other factors at play has helped massively with the mental side. Thank you. Also had hormonal hunger to deal with as well, which was fun. So pleased that I've made 2 weeks at consistent calories. Laura, that is phenomenal. And I think so to recap, remember we were talking to her the other week about how her hunger levels had ramped up. Or were much higher despite the fact that her expenditure had gone down. It would take a while for that to catch up.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, like, just knowing that there's a reason is so helpful. Like, there's a reason for that. It doesn't actually change any, it doesn't change the fact that you're still driven to eat more than what you actually need because you've reduced your activity levels for the time being. It takes a while for that to settle. But just knowing that there's a reason is just, like, really, really helpful.
Yeah, we talked about this before. We talked about this a lot in lockdown. Human beings don't do well in limbo. Like, and again, this is why the word closure after a breakup is, like, so coveted. Because we don't do well when we don't know what the fuck is going on. if we have a reason, if providing some logic and some rationale to an already completely psychotic human brain is, you know, it's, what is it? What it, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Just ignore
reassuring.
I think I was going a bit left of field. We'll move on. But yeah, no, I mean, it is. And that's what Emma and I are really trying to do here is, again, you know, we talk about taking away the shame around food and the emotion around food, giving you guys some like practical things to think about. The goal is to help you feel better in your head as well as everything else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kerry's saying, you're pretty much the same though. It's actually quite bizarre hearing everything from the first lockdown. Oh yeah, I bet. I bet we say loads of stuff like, oh, I bet this only lasts a week. Oh, COVID doesn't seem like it's gonna.
All I remember that we did constantly, like our running bit, was like, apparently there's something going around. And we thought it was so funny. We did it every show. Yeah. For like,
yeah. I still think it's funny. Yeah, have you heard of this thing? Like, I don't know. I think a lot of people are getting ill at the moment. I don't know what it is though.
Pandemic. I would come to the party. Pandemic. I love her. We need to get her on the podcast.
Oh my god, imagine. That would just be the best. Maybe she could do the intro. I would sign up to the EC method, but
also just the way she like pops the Pringle into her mouth.
Okay. Right, we're good, we're done. We will be back on Friday.
Yeah, we're back on Friday at 1 p.m. Emma, I'll drop you a WhatsApp in a bit.
Okay. Love you, bye.